Welcome to Mysteries to Die For and this toe tag. I am T.G. Wolfe, and I'm here with Jack, my piano player and producer. This is normally a podcast where we combine storytelling with original music to put you at the heart of a mystery. Today is a bonus episode that we call a toe tag. It's the first chapter from a fresh release in the mystery, crime, or thriller genre. And today's featured release is Rule 1 by Michael Lucker. So Rule 1 is a cop mystery slash serial killer. Dent McCreary is FBI's best profiler. He's also a drunk, homeless, and a washout as a boyfriend. But when a body is found in a laundromat, solving the over-the-top kill demands someone who doesn't play by the rules. Bottom line, Rule 1 is for you if you like your killers creative and your detectives hardcore. All right, so we are going to do more than chapter one. As you'll hear, this has pretty short chapters. It makes the pace really punchy, really pretty exciting. So we are actually going to do about four chapters. Let's jump in with chapter one, Manhattan Beach. Santa Maria Riviera Rodriguez was the prettiest of her sisters. At least, that's what she was told. Of course, her sisters were told that too. The men of Manhattan Beach, California would tell a woman anything to get them into bed. But Maria had reason to believe it. She had the longest legs, the softest skin, and the kind of eyes for which most men would die. Despite her genetic gifts, Maria had somehow maintained a humility that could melt any ape's heart. The Great White Buffalo. That's what they called her, for she was the one girl in the South Bay no man could capture. Maria was holding out for someone special, and she knew he was out there, somewhere. Vomiting over the side of the Manhattan Beach Pier had become a ritual for J.R. Popper. After a half dozen shots of Jägermeister or Goldschlager, or whatever the bartender was pouring at the local watering hole, he would stumble his beefy ass down the main drag to the long pier, stick his fingers down his throat, and yak what was left of his Kraft macaroni dinner into the waves of the Pacific. That way, he had room for more. By the time JR made it to Harry O's Tavern, there was a line around the block to get in. Scantily clad beach girls sporting baby oil tans and Walmart miniskirts sucked on Marlboro lights, trying their best to maintain their stick-thin figures. But it was the girl on the far side of the street that piqued JR's interest. A dark-skinned beauty in blue jeans and a sweatshirt, toting a backpack full of books on her way home from community college. "It's from Columbus," Maria said with an intoxicating accent. "His ships. The Nina, Pinta, Santa Maria." That was how Maria got her name. She could have been talking Swahili for all JR cared. She was the hottest thing he had seen in his 3 minutes that morning on Pornhub. Between his pretty boy looks and college boy charm, JR had little problem talking Maria into a cup of joe at the corner coffee shop. That's the real trick all the ladies' men knew. If they wanted a girl to trust them, they didn't take them to a bar, for God's sakes. They took them for coffee. There was no harm in that. Little did Maria know that while she was freshening up in the powder room, JR slipped two drops too many of rohypnol into her cappuccino. An hour later, she was frolicking naked in the surf in the light of the moon, thinking she had met Prince Charming. JR never carried a condom. The indentation in his wallet would ruin any chance he had of getting laid the moment a girl saw him pay a bill. Not that he ever did that. But given the fact Maria was three sheets to the wind, JR had little trouble convincing her that he would pull out. 6 weeks later, Maria had a hell of a time tracking him down. It seemed he didn't work as a film producer for Paramount, but as a film processor for Walgreens. When she told him she was pregnant, he nearly choked on his dentine. After work, he begged her to have the big A. But no good daughter of an illegal immigrant Catholic shipbuilder would ever consider an abortion. So, JR split town, took a prestigious management position in the south of Guam that he is what he told her. Months later, word leaked that he was selling tractor parts for his uncle in Schenectady. But to JR, that lacked the same panache. Given the quantity of steroids swirling through JR's body, Maria had twins. Now she had two kids on her hands and a family that disowned her for having babies out of wedlock. It was her turn to open the laundromat that morning, a job she hated, but one that allowed her to have the girls with her, save money on childcare, and put a little extra away to one day return to college. She frowned when she saw the lock on the back door was broken. It was 6 a.m. and still dark, but for a sliver of pink on the horizon. She looked around the back alley parking lot and saw no one. Surely nobody would harm a mother with two babies in her arms. The door creaked open on rusty hinges, allowing Maria to peek inside. Before she made it to the light switch, wham! The wind blew the door closed behind her, leaving her and the girls in the dark. One of them began to cry, so the other one did too. That's the thing about twins. Everything happens in stereo. A loud thump sounded in the front of the laundromat. Maria's eyes widened. She prayed to God for her daughter to be quiet, but knew no God would answer her, at least according to her mother. Maria laid the twins on a blanket in the laundry basket. The thump sounded again. Nervously, she grabbed the metal bar used to secure the back door to defend herself, slowly made her way to the light, and flicked the switch. At the far end of the long room, a lone commercial dryer circled round and round. Thump, thump. Strange. The store had been closed for hours. Someone would have had to put more than $20 in the machine to keep it turning all night. She put the bar down and went to the end of the racket. Nearing the dryer, she stalled, seeing a heavy chain wrapped around it. "Come okay?" she muttered. Thump, thump. Closer she stepped, seeing a padlock fastened to the chain. Suddenly her face paled, and she screamed at the top of her lungs. Through the dryer window, she saw, going round and round, a man. His body contorted in some sadistic pose like Cirque du Soleil, his eyes swollen like a beaten bullfrog, and his blood splashed against the circular window like a crimson suds of Satan. Chapter 2. Cucarachaville. Of all the gin joints in all the world, she had to walk into mine. The words dribbled from Bogart's lips on the last black and white TV this side of the Mississippi. Dent McCreary didn't care about most anything these days. All he knew was those words struck a chord. Actually, a whole symphony. After the worst breakup of his whole miserable life, he laid painfully alone in this dingy hole-in-the-wall apartment in the heart of North Hollywood with Chiquita Banana yelling a blue streak of Spanish through the neighboring wall. "Shut the hell up," he bellowed. The last thing he wanted was to hear a woman's voice. He still had his ex-girlfriend's pompous groan bouncing about his brain like a steel ball in a pinball machine. It's not that he wasn't used to it. He grew up in a house full of women who hated men. "Men are evil. Men suck. Screw men," they would say. When his old man had walked out on him, his chain-smoking mom and anxiety-ridden sister, his mom had rented out a room in their ho-hum ranch house to make ends meet. What entered was a bevy of jeered and jilted females dumping their unpacked daddy baggage at the dinner table. The bitchin' kitchen is what he called it. The place where he was taught, by guilt by association, that he was bad. Since then, he tried to make amends for all the bad things other men had done to other women throughout history. It was a lot for an 8-year-old, and it took its toll. "Bam, bam, bam," Dent banged his fist on the wall to quiet Chiquita down. The bitch banged back. He turned up the volume on his TV and aimed it at the wall to try to drown her out. Problem was, now he didn't hear his phone. His cell phone buzzed on the kitchen counter right next to an empty bottle of Jack and a half-empty bottle of Jose, Dent's two best friends of late and primary reason for his current condition. His wistful hair laid matted to his bedhead, his three-day beard cried for a razor, and his bloodshot eyes strained to open. A wrinkled gray tee and black sweats clung to his tall frame. the specimen of a man who in his 20s had a 12-minute shot at a modeling career, now in his early 40s, couldn't get his picture taken at a camera convention. The woman volleyed back with her musical weapon, La Bamba. She must have had surround sound too, because the volume of her system put Dent's TV to shame. He pressed it against the wall for maximum effect. A fat roach scurried off from behind it. "Para bailar la bamba," blared the music. Dent's cell phone rang. Ilsa pleaded on the TV, "Kiss me as if it's the last time." "Son of a bitch," Dent grumbled. Water filling his eyes, he turned for something, anything, to rectify the situation. He reached for his bedside table where an empty vial of aspirin, wadded up Kleenex, and a Glock 9mm sat. That would do the trick. Then he spied his Louisville Slugger leaning against the wall and thought the better of it. He swung the bat like Roberto Clemente. It crashed through the cheap drywall. Dust sprayed. Pictures fell. The TV tipped. Ilsa stopped. La Bamba stopped. And Chiquita went off screaming down the hall in terror, leaving Dent alone in his apartment, realizing what he had done. "Fuck," he said. His cell phone rang politely one last time, and then it stopped too. Dent craned to the screen. It simply said, "Missed call." He sighed. Soon he would check his messages to learn he had to go to work. A man was found dead in a dryer in Manhattan Beach. Chapter 3, Crime Scene. Yellow police tape labeled "Do Not Cross" roped off the Manhattan Beach laundromat, keeping beachy bystanders at bay. Still, nosy reporters with too much collagen tried to annoy their way past the uniformed patrolmen, just trying to do their jobs. "Aw, come on, Dave, just a few shots," said a puffy-lipped photojournalist with Cloroxed hair. "Can't do it, Misty," said the debonair officer in a neatly pressed black uniform. "It's a murder scene." Her brow furrowed as much as it could, given the plastic surgery. "Who died?" she asked. "No idea. It's not pretty." She smiled, seductively. "I'll make it worth your while." He rolled his eyes. "That's what you said last time." She huffed a breath. "I did blow you. Once, and not for very long," he replied. "Well, that wasn't my fault." Boom. A Buick LeSabre, circa 1998, popped the curb, pulling to a stop nearby. Out the door crawled Dent, half clean, half sober, and nursing a styrofoam cup of black coffee. He donned his usual ratty sport coat, black jeans, black boots, and black tie he never pulled up. "Dent, how's things?" said Lieutenant Mac Lenowitz, a wry social climber whose third time failing the bar exam steered his career off a cliff and into the muddy ditch of law enforcement. "Shitty, thanks," replied Dent. "At least you're consistent." "So are you, Mac. What do you got?" "One poor bastard curled up in a dryer that turned all night." Inside the laundromat, Dent peered in the dryer and got a glance at what was left of a tangled body lying in a shallow pool of pale flesh and red blood. "Looks like a giant bowl of SpaghettiOs." Lenowitz grimaced. "You got an interesting way of looking at things." "That's why I get paid the big bucks," Dent craned. "Why am I here?" "Murders happen all the time in Los Angeles County. The LAPD could handle just fine." Lenowitz nodded to the wall above the dryer. Written in blood in a circle was number 1. "Lovely," Dent said. The writing implied, of course, that there would be more murders, and serial killers were unquestionably the jurisdiction of the FBI. "Any witnesses?" Dent asked. "One. Poor girl over there." He nodded to Maria, standing in the corner with a baby in her arms. Her younger sister, Nina, held baby number 2. She was just as beautiful as Maria, but not quite as tall or naive. Dent raised a brow. "Jesus, they frickin' models?" "Nope, the one on the left works here. The other at the car wash up the street." Dent shook his head. "I live in the wrong neighborhood." "You and I both, brother." "Got prints, video?" asked Dent. "Dustin now." He regarded an officer brushing the back door. No cams, though. How about there? Dent said, pointing across the street to the First California Bank. It was a bit more modern, a building with stucco walls, tinted windows, and security cameras pointing in every direction. Mac nodded. We'll get it. Dent stepped over to Maria and Nina in the back of the laundromat. Ladies, which one of you is Maria?
I am,
she said, her face weary from the day's events. Cute kid, Dent said, eyeing her child.
Gracias.
You the sister?
Si.
Who are you? Spat Nina. Name's Dent McCreary. I'm with the FBI.
You the asshole they keep us waiting for?
Yeah, he said, unfazed.
You FBI? You look like shit, Nina continued.
Maria scowled at her sister. I'm sorry, mi hermana's a little on the rough side.
It's all right, Dent said. I'm used to it.
Maria smiled.
Mind if I ask you a few questions? Asked Dent.
Don't tell this pig shit, said Maria.
Claro que sí, whatever you like.
Maria handed her baby to her sister. Nina rolled her eyes and curled away from the babies, grumbling in Spanish. Maria turned apologetically to Dent. She's had a bad day.
Worse than yours?
I guess not, she acknowledged. I know you already answered questions for the police, but we do things a little different.
I understand, she said.
He smiled to put her at ease, and she took it the wrong way. That was the thing about Los Angeles. Flirting was in the water. If anyone smiled at anyone, they thought you wanted to sleep with them. So no one smiled at anyone. Can you tell me, when you got here, was the door locked?
She shook her head.
No, it was broke.
Dent glanced toward the door.
You were alone then? Dent asked.
See, just the babies. I open, the manager close.
He went on to ask a variety of routine questions about the manager, the employees, the customers, and herself, which she answered bashfully, growing impatient when her babies began to cry.
Maria, called Nina.
May I contact you later, if I have any questions? Asked Dent. Maria nodded and scribbled her number on a piece of paper.
Call any time.
Chapter 4. The Office.
Are you high?
Barked Special Agent in Charge, Richard Parker. The tall, lean gentleman with the clean crop of silver hair leaned over his desk at Dent in the doorway of Parker's cookie-cutter corner office at Los Angeles FBI headquarters. The office was adorned in boring tan furniture, beige chairs, and one too many Olin Mills photographs of his average wife and pale kids. An off-white wall behind him hung a large frame photo of the President of the United States with a broad smile of bleached teeth.
Is that a trick question? Replied Dent.
You smashed a hole in your neighbor's wall?
Technically, it was my wall.
Parker tossed down a manila folder with frustration.
Dang it, Dent! What am I supposed to do with you?
Dent raised an eyebrow. He was not surprised at his superior's Boy Scout explicatives. It was that he still used them after 20 years on the job.
I can't keep covering for you. Day after day, you violate department ethics, bureau code, and California state law. Can you give me one good reason not to ask for your badge?
No, said Dent flatly. I can give you 17.
Parker tilted his head.
17?
That's how many arrests I made this year. It was 8 more than anyone else in the office, and Parker knew it. The rest of his team was not incompetent. They were just a bunch of straight arrows from Ivy League schools who did things by the book. But by the book didn't cut it in LA. Given the statistics, Parker granted Dent a little latitude.
You arrested 15. The other two you killed.
Semantics, Dent said. Dent's smart tongue was handed down to him by his father. A fraud and forger, Bruce McCreary lived life on the edge until he was thrown in prison. It wasn't until Dent was in high school that he learned his father didn't actually leave his family. He was taken. Occasionally, Dent would visit him at Somerset Penitentiary, but found that every time he did, his father would whip him with words. Eventually, Dent stopped going altogether. He fought tooth and nail not to turn out like his old man, but he assumed he had him to thank for his ability to think like a criminal. After low marks and high truancy in high school, Dent enlisted in the Army. It was on a whim, hungover on a Tuesday. He stumbled into the local recruitment office in the heart of Pittsburgh with 3 cigs left in the pack and $2 in his wallet. He signed his signature 4 times, and the next thing he knew, he was on a plane to Fort Benning, Georgia, in basic training. Quickly, he found his street fights as a youth on the south side of Pittsburgh aptly prepared him for hand-to-hand combat as an infantryman. There he met a senior intelligence officer who admired his gumption and taught him to track and attack. 3 tours in Afghanistan left him with 1 Purple Heart, 2 Gold Stars, a Medal of Valor, 22 confirmed kills, and more scars than he could count. When he returned to the States, he could have stumbled into politics had it not been for the drinking. But watching the guts of friends and enemies blow out of their bodies required a little something to take the edge off. Fortunately for Dent, his commanding officer landed a high-ranking position at Quantico and recruited Dent to pay him back for saving his life in the late-night siege in Kabul. So began a career of one of the few non-college grads in the Bureau's recent history. Exasperated, SAC Parker leaned back in his bland chair. "I can cover you with the DA. He owes me some favors. But I'm afraid I can't help you with this." Parker handed Dent a piece of paper stamped "Eviction" in bold red letters. Dent sighed. "Your landlord's quick on the draw," said Parker. "She's a lunatic," said Dent. "You're the one who put the bat through the wall." "Fair point. But we're going to have to change some things up around here." Dent didn't like the sound of that. One bit. "What do you mean?" "It means no more flying solo." Dent's stomach churned. "Wait, what? Why?" "We have a new agent coming in. They're going to need training, and you need a babysitter." "I don't do well with partners, you know that," said Dent. "Clearly, you don't do well without them. This is the only way I can keep you off the books and on the job. You don't like it? Put your badge on my desk and your resume on Monster." Dent weighed his options, and there appeared to be none. All right, so that is the first 4 chapters of Rule 1 by Michael Lucker. So Rule 1 stands out among other FBI serial killer thrillers with the very creative way the kills are made. Dent is out, is called out to the body of a man tumbled and dried to death in an industrial-grade dryer. It's an unusual way to kill and reflects an equally unusual killer. And this killer has their targets, but doesn't let collateral damage happen. It's an unusual twist that has McCreary thinking twice. So just the whole premise of this book, not that there is somebody out there doing it, but the creative, well, I said it in that part of the review, but the creative ways that this person is killing is just, it keeps you reading. It's just, what more can he do? And then he does more and you're like, well, I never would have thought of that. So thinking about Dent as our detective, he is an FBI take on an old school PI. And I have to admit, that's one of my favorite kind of PIs. He's a rule breaker with few ties. He doesn't hide behind or wield the Bureau's influence. He's saddled with a new partner, someone very different from him, but the two complement each other skill-wise and make a very competent team. The pacing is perfect for readers who like stories that fly. Some of these chapters are only 2-3 pages long, as you've already heard. Some of them are a little bit more, but it is just bam, 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 bam. Like, I think I speed read this possibly maybe in one sitting. If not one sitting, it was a short 2. There's little time for dust to settle as what starts out to be a single graphic homicide turns into a nationwide manhunt, woman hunt, person hunt, whatever, bad guy hunt. Logic in Rule 1 is solid. This is a pretty linear plot where McCreary and the killer's actions are on 2 defined paths, and they are both speeding to the same intersection. And you see that there's a big crash coming, and you're just waiting for it. Overall, this was a fast-paced follow-along mystery/thriller. I'm a fan of down-and-out detectives like McCreary, and while I don't always like seeing the grisly results of murder, the balance between the intrigue and the gross kept me on the page. I highly recommend this for lovers of thrillers, medical thrillers, and hard luck detectives. Rule 1 was released from Wordy and is available on online digital retailers. Now let me introduce you to our author, Michael Lucker. He is an author, screenwriter, and lecturer of creative writing. He began his career writing television commercials while earning his degree in broadcasting and film at Boston University's College of Communication. Soon after, he landed in Los Angeles, working in production on series for ABC, NBC, and CBS, before taking a job as an assistant to Steven Spielberg on feature films. His projects eventually led him to screenwriting, where he helped pen more than 20 feature screenplays. A renowned instructor in screenwriting, Michael serves as a lecturer at the University of North Georgia, mentor in Reinhardt University's Creative Writing MFA program, and founder of Screenwriter School. You can find him on the web at michaellucker.com, at Instagram at Michael Lucker, and the same with Facebook. Wondering what to read after you finish Rule 1? Partners in Crime Tours is your ultimate destination for all things mystery, crime, thriller, and cozy. Since 2011, they've been working to fill bookshelves with gripping and heart-pounding reads. Discover your new mystery series and connect with other fans with Partners in Crime. Look up Partners in Crime Tours on the web or your favorite social media. And authors, whether you're looking to promote your latest thriller, discover a new mystery series, or connect with fellow fans of the genre, PICT has you covered. Check out their promotion options that come with the personal attention of a dedicated coordinator. Come back next week for Season 9, Stuff That Can Kill You. Kira Jacobs returns to the morgue with The Curse of the Siren Shriek, where sound is our sticky means of murder. And it includes an extended conversation between Jack and Kira. Always a fascinating listen to. With that, Jack, take us out.